introduction. Okay, this is Peggy Van Skoik. Today is Tuesday, September 28th, 2010, and I'm in the offices of David Martin, and we're here today to hear about his memories and his life. So we were just talking a bit about the old school, and you were saying that the building that stands at the head of Academy Street was always a high school.
That's correct. It did become the junior high for the last maybe 20 years of its existence.
Okay.
And I graduated from that high school in 1945.
1945.
And I was around when the old one was torn down, and then this was built in its place. And this morning, I got news for you. I found the cornerstone it says this. It says the cornerstone is 24 inches wide, 12 inches high, 10 inches deep. It's heavy. But it says Cary High School, First State Public High School in NC. And it says it was established April 3rd, 1907, and this building was erected in 1913. Now we're talking about the cornerstone was in the building that was erected in 1913 and was torn down in the late 30s or early 40s.
Okay. Okay.
And so that's... Now,
how did you come across the cornerstone?
I have some... I wish I'd checked my dates. I can check back. But there was... it was a boarding school before... before it became as just a regular high school for local people. People used to come from all over the state, and they boarded in those dormitories. And there was one on the side towards... Walnut Street and Kildare. And then I had a part in tearing that down because I was a kid and they paid me to clean the brick as they were tearing it down. Back then you didn't waste anything. And so I had a part in that. But then later I finished high school there. I think I was in grammar school when that was torn down. But after I finished high school, I went into the military. And when I got out, I was a contractor building. And the state paid me to tear down the old gym on Faculty Drive. I mean, not old gym, the old Teachridge. And before that, it was a boarding school before it became the Teachridge. And I lived in that school, in that place, because I was... when I got out of the military, my mother was cooking for the teachers that stayed there, and we lived there. She lived upstairs, and I lived in the basement. By the way, that basement also was used as part of the school system. And I was talking to someone just recently, and he told me about that.
Wow.
And so it has a little bit of history, but anyway.
Do you know when the Teachridge was torn down?
I tore it down in probably, I'd have to check my dates, but I think it was torn down around in the 50s.
In the early 50s?
Yeah, and like everybody back then, I didn't throw anything away. I built an office building at 3700 Western Boulevard out of the material out of that building. It's a little three-story building next to McDonald's. But on the mine is on the corner of the Western Boulevard and Gorman Street. And
so the whole three stories you were able to cover with the bricks?
The wood, I framed it with the wood, and bricked it with the brick. But my son-in-law recently made it look a little better by painting it.
Oh.
And so it doesn't show the old brick. but I used brick out of the old Teachridge to build numerous houses in the Cary area. You know, brick veneered them. It was a whole lot of brick because the walls are very thick.
Oh.
And it produced a whole lot of material I could use in building. And I developed Triangle Forest in 1959. And that's out on the old Cary Highway just before we get to the Cary Parkway. And in fact, the street through that is Maryland Circle. And I named that circle for my wife. Her name is Marilyn. Mm. And Jody Maggio married Marilyn Monroe, the movie actress, but David Martin married the real Marilyn.
Oh.
and we built a house out there recently, and about 3 years ago. And a little fellow working with me said, "How much you pay for this lot?" And the answer, for a half an acre lot, full half an acre, was $100, because I paid $200 an acre for the whole farm. I paid $12,000 for a 62-acre farm. But I built a number of houses in there and veneered them with those old brick. So they got a history in a subdivision. It's one of the oldest subdivisions around Cary, but there been many, many built since then. But anyway, it has a little history there all over our neighborhood.
That is great. They just recently found the foundations of the old Teachridge, and they were trying to figure out when the building was torn down. And I guess there's part of the foundation still there, buried as they're digging things up to restore that building. They found the foundations.
Yeah, and it would be fairly easy for me to go back to the county records, because I remember as I was tearing it down. I used some of the material to prop up some walls that were very high on a house I built on Reedy Creek Road. So I can pretty well put a date on it. And I can probably put a date on it from a record of that house over there. Not the house, the building on Western Boulevard at Gorman. The office building.
And it's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, I built the first shopping center in Cary. And I was at church one morning, and Mr. Raymond Morgan was the manager of Hudson Belt downtown. He was a deacon in our church, First Baptist in Cary on Academy Street, one block from the thing we're talking about. And he was standing under the shade of that tree right there that you see on my card.
Right in front of the Baptist Church on downtown.
Yeah, and he motioned me over, and I went over, and he said, "David, Cary is beginning to grow." Back then, you know, when I got into Cary, there was about 1,200 people there, and now it's over 140,000 people there. But anyway, he said, "David, Cary is beginning to grow. One of these days, somebody is going to build a shopping center right here. Have you thought about it?" No, I had not thought about it, but he planted the idea. And I got to looking around. I ended up with this site out here that you're sitting here interviewing me on right now.
In South Hills Mall.
And the service plaza over there was the first thing. And that has the brick from the dormitory. See, I hauled them out here when I was tearing it down. And it was a lot of bricks, many tons of brick. And we would clean them up and use them at various houses we built, in that office building I told you about. And that service plaza was built out of those brick.
Wow. Now, what is in the service plaza now?
When I built it, the main thing was a grocery store. Probably 20 or 30 other stores, a lot of different small stores in there. And then we built the, I'd have to check on that too, but we built the motel there, and that was the first large motel in town. And in fact, there's a round of my Cary history book, and there's some mention in there of when we built and what we built. We built the first Twin Theater in Cary, and we built the first chain restaurant in Cary. That was the Hardee's. And Cary was just sleep of town, you know. And we built a lot of things like that. And
now, when did you build the first building for this shopping center, for South Hills Mall?
I believe the first, I started up on the corner coming this way. And it was in the, I think, early 60s. Along in there from 60 to 65 was about the time we were building a little bit of everything. And a lot of these care boys came right here and helped me build it. When they're teenagers, they're out there working.
That's great.
And now I know a man that's has a very high position with the company and makes a great salary. But he got his start in construction when we were building the service plaza and the motel out here. That was the first two, anything above. We had a lot of little one-story buildings. See, Cary used to have Highway 1 and 64 coming through town.
Right and down what is today Chatham Street?
Chatham Street, that's correct. And we didn't have any traffic lights. And we thought we had really arrived when they installed a traffic light that you could push a button and stop the traffic. I think the state did that for us because we couldn't afford it. And they did that so that we could cross there in case of fire, because half of Cary was on the other side of that. But now, to tell you how circumstances were, many times we'd have to pull the truck off to get it started because we couldn't even afford to put a new battery in the, on the truck we had. And at the same time, the chief of police was the chief of the fire department, chief of the police, kind of like town manager too, and he used his own personal car to read the meters for the water meters in Cary. He wore out three or four sets of hinges on his car getting in and out to read the meters. And he was all over the, he was a one-man show and did a great job. He had one man that drove the dump truck. And I could tell you about the man driving the dump truck was his assistant chief, you might say, and the only other policeman. And he would chase people down coming through from up north, you know, going to Florida maybe, on Highway 1. And he'd chase them down to give them a ticket on a dump truck. And, anyway, it was a colorful past for Cary. Great time.
Wow, that's fantastic. So you've had a real hand in building Cary into what it is today.
Because a little bit.
Yeah, but, sounds like it.
Cary has come a long way. And I'm still telling people, the only place you can go better than Cary is heaven.
Well, I agree with that. So let's go back to the school a little bit. Well, let's start out, go a little further back than that. Tell me about your background, your parents, and your family.
Well,
you were not born in Cary? Or when did you get here?
No, I wasn't. I think we moved there in 36 or 37.
Okay.
And we rented a house down on the corner of Kildare and Pleasance Road. And we lived there. It cost $12 a month for the rent.
Wow.
And during the war, every speck of the land was used for gardening. And you know, side yard, front yard, everywhere. I mean, it was a matter of surviving.
Yeah.
And we had running water. You grab a bucket and run out to the well to get it. And we had a running toilet, too. You had to run out to the privy house out in the backyard to use the bathroom, you might say. It was tough times. And I've dug toilet pits for, you know, when they get full, I would dig another one. Make a lot of money. I made $5 for digging pit holes, you know.
Now, how deep did you dig them?
Oh, probably 4 foot.
Four feet down, and
yeah, probably.
Just smaller, or slightly smaller than the structure that was going to go over it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
The care's come a long ways.
Yes, indeed.
And back then, people didn't have. They didn't have cars. Very few people had a car. And I'd see the men with a lunch box walking downtown and getting an old bus to go to the highway shop. And I learned something, too. I learned that people that lived to retire and I'd see them rocking on the front porch for just 2 or 3 years and they were gone. And there was inactivity. Is not good. I am now 82, and I still work every day but Sunday.
Wow.
And
we're not going to catch you rocking on the front porch, are we?
No, I'm not. Well, I might at the end of the day after my job's over.
Oh, that's great. So now, where were you born?
I was born in Randolph County.
Okay.
And then I moved to... my mother was from Gravel County. See, my mother was a widow before the last child was born. And so when we moved to Cary, there was nobody, black or white, as poor as we were.
And, how many children were in your family?
Well, she was married the first time. Her husband, she was an O'Brien. She had 3 children by that marriage. And he died in 1918 in the flu epidemic. And then... about 10 years later, she married my father, and she had 4 children by that marriage. And when I was 10 years old, I would be picking blackberries and sell them all over Cary for 5 cents a quart. Now, $3 a pint, that's $6 a quart. I was getting 5 cents. And then we couldn't sell all of them. It was such hard times. And if we didn't sell them, we'd can them. We'd end up with 200 quarts of blackberries sometimes, and you eat 200 quarts of blackberries from one season to the other, you'd about turn to blackberries. And it just, when I got married, my wife brought home a can of store-bought blackberries in a can. I said, honey, if you don't ever bring in more blackberries here, it'll be too soon.
You got your fill.
Yeah, I did. But it was tough. I'd sell clover and bread to save. Lancaster seed, I'd sell, grit newspaper. Then I got big enough to get me a route at Raleigh Times. I had 21 customers in Cary when I took it, and in nothing flat, I tripled it. I got it up to 63 customers that you would knock on every door trying to sell your paper. And they were very gracious and responded to help the poor orphan boy along.
Aww.
But I was putting over half the money in our house when I was 11 years old.
You were bringing half the income of your house?
Over
half when you were 11 years old.
That's correct.
So your father had died by that time as well?
Well, my youngest sister, who is now in her late 70s, she was not even born. So it was tough. And the good people of Cary, mother would say, when we were down to nothing to eat for that night or something, and mother would say, the Lord would provide, the Lord would look after his own. I think she's crazy because we needed something to eat. But you know, the good people of Cary, somebody would show up and bring us something. Bring that widow lady something to eat for her and those children.
Aww.
It was just a wonderful experience to know that people care and help you. In fact, let me tell you something about my favorite teacher.
Please.
Through grammar school and high school. I was in the 6th grade at the elementary school that I told you was already torn down a number of years ago. And her name was Julia Rann Woodard. Julia Rann Woodard. And she was kin to the Gregorys at Gregory Pool Equipment Company. And she was sister to the Gregorys. But anyway, we had the grade mothers would give our class, say, football. And then when we graduated up to the fifth grade or sixth grade, we'd carry that ball with us. And the little affluent boys would decide who could play with that ball while you choose up sides. But Julia Ray and Woodard broke up that little group of affluent boys controlling that ball. She'd say, "I believe in democracy, don't you?" And she would let different boys every week, two boys would be captain of the team. You choose two teams to play ball against each other. And one week, the poorest boy in Cary had the privilege of being the captain of a team. She gave me some thoughts that maybe I could make it in life. I wouldn't have to stay on the bottom of the round all my life. And another thing she would do, she'd bring a little old radio when President Franklin Delano Roosevelt was making a speech. She'd bring her little radio and set it on the desk. And this is the way she talked. She said, "Listen, listen, this is history being made right now." And she made her teaching come alive. And she developed people into useful citizens. And so she was my favorite teacher all the way through grammar school, high school, and even when I went to Carolina, she was still my favorite teacher of all times.
Well, well deserved. She sounds like she was just a wonderful teacher.
She was.
And took care of all of her students equally, made sure everyone was treated equally.
And classrooms are a whole lot bigger than they are now.
Really?
And she didn't have an assistant either.
Wow. Do you remember how many kids there were in your class?
I'm not positive. I guess records could show it, but I thought we had about 40 in a class.
That's a lot.
Well,
Wow.
And she did a good job.
She sure did. Uh-huh. Oh, I love that story. Now, your daughter, Donna, told us that you had a great story about a cow. Tell me about the cow when you were in school.
Well, I had, one time I had two cows.
Okay.
But I would stake them out down around the school property. Not on the middle of the field now, but around the outer edges. And I'd run home at lunch and water the cow. And then put her, stake her out to another place, see if we didn't have a pasture. And then I would have to run all the way home and do that, and then I'd run all the way downtown and thumb to Raleigh to work in the Piggly Wiggly grocery store in Raleigh. I didn't have time to go to study periods. I'd take the last two periods to be study periods so I could skip those to go to work. And all I got out of school was what I learned on the class. I didn't have time to study. I didn't even carry a book home but once or twice the year I was a senior.
Wow.
And then I didn't have time to study because, you see, I would go and do that. By then I'd gotten into chicken business and I'd come do up my chickens and milk the cow and all this. And in other words, it was from dawn to way after dark that you had something to do. But it was a great experience. I wouldn't take anything for having to work and learn to work.
Boy, did you ever. Now, did your teachers forgive you having to turn in homework? Did they understand the situation so they didn't penalize you for not doing your homework?
Well, I guess I knew my situation.
Right. Okay. So you got through all your classes and you graduated from high school.
Yeah. By the skin of my teeth.
Yeah.
But I would just like history. I remember you'd have bold topics, a paragraph. Teacher would start on one side, asking people. I just read in the head of them, and I can answer anything asked because I just read it. But it didn't stick like if I had studied it the night before. So I'm just an old inner country boy that the town has grown up around.
That you grew it up by building a lot of it.
I just a little cog and a big wheel.
Oh, that's good.
But I knew everybody in town by name. And I knew every cat and dog in town by name. But I was knocking on the doors doing something for them. I know Dr. Yarva was living and had his office in a wing of the house right across from First Baptist, corner of Park and First Baptist. And I would do his gardening. Everybody, including the doctors, had gardens back then. I'd tend the garden. But one thing they had me doing that I didn't like was Ms. Yarber would have me plant those beautiful flowers around her house. And I thought that was foolish because you couldn't eat them. And everything was dedicated to survival.
Yeah.
And it was tough.
Yeah.
But it was a great learning experience.
I bet.
Hey, you've talked to Donna, huh?
Well, she sent us an email and said, you need to talk to my father. He has some great stories about the school, and she mentioned the cow. So she's the one. I had a number of people recommend that we talk to you, so she was just one of them. Guy Mendenhall recommended we talk to you, Bob Heater, a number of people. Mm-hmm. So here I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it was, I remember one morning the cow dashed out. You know, I didn't lock the gate.
Uh-oh.
And I was milking the cow. And the cow housed in a garage there. It's just a little one-car garage, you might say. But the cow was in there. The feed room was at the outer edge, and I'd milk the cow. And that morning, the cow got away, and I chased her all over the hillside. And every time I was taking a breath, it was just like a knife cutting through my lungs. I was so out of breath. I got that cow back home, and I took a leather strap, and I was beating that cow. And my mother came out there. It got all over me about doing that, and she to think that she had raised a son that would mistreat a cow, and she got so excited that she had a heart attack. I promised the Lord I'd never whip that cow again if he just let my mother live. And she lived.
Oh, thank goodness. Wow. Oh, wow.
But I was selling milk for 10 cents a quart.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. So now, did you also, you rented mules to help plow gardens?
Oh, yeah. I would rent Mr. Bob Saul's mule, and I'd pay him a quarter an hour, and I'd get 50 cents an hour for plowing the garden. And so I thought I was a big boy when I could make as much as that old big mule's making.
So you were plowing gardens all over Cary?
Well,
with
just
you and the
wherever
mule?
I could, but now I also plowed. He had about 16 acres of corn, and
wow.
I would plow the corn.
Mr. Saul's?
Mr. Saul's, Mr. Bob Saul's.
Okay.
And his daughter Mildred had three girls, and the youngest one was Mildred, and she and I were in the same class. And she thought it was beneath her dignity to be out there dropping soda around the corn while I was plowing. And so she was not a happy camper. She was unhappy doing that kind of work. It was beneath a woman's status in life to be out there in a field. But it was a great, great experience all over Cary. And like I say, I knew everybody in Cary.
Now, do you remember any of your other classmates, and are any of them still around?
Oh, yeah.
Around
yeah.
Cary?
Not many of them. Most of them gone on to glory.
Mm.
I remember Joe Grissom. We were good friends.
Sure.
But anyway, I went by and looked at that. I hadn't seen that cornerstone in years.
Yeah.
And I went by and looked at it this morning.
Now, where is it?
It's at Van's house. It's in my neighborhood. He used to work with me. We worked together for 50 years.
Oh.
And he had it up there. And,
oh, that's great.
And I told him the other day I just wanted to pick it up. Maybe I could contribute it to the cause, you know.
That would be fantastic.
And he said, well, you need some help because it's heavy.
Okay. Yeah, I bet the town would be happy to help with that if you were willing to. To get it to the town as they're building that building, they might be able to incorporate it somehow. That would be great.
Well, it might be. I thought of that. You know, there's a little turnaround at the end of Academy where you make a U-turn around the front steps.
Yes.
And it might would be good to incorporate it into that thing because it's right on that site where that building is where the next one's built. And I think it would be part of history, you know.
It definitely would. It absolutely would. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we want to preserve as much history of that site and that building as we possibly can. So
absolutely.
You know, absolutely. So much of Cary was built around education and that building. So it's very precious.
Yeah. We were a pioneer in education.
Indeed, we have been all along. Mm-hmm. So that's just super.
You know, knowledge is power. You know, it's when you absorb the teacher's words, the books, that gives you power. But wisdom is using that knowledge timely and correctly. So we need education.
We definitely do.
And
so after you graduated from high school, you went to... UNC?
Yeah, I went over there on the GI Bill.
Okay.
By the way, while I was over there, I bought a house in Cary. Well, the first, while I was in the military, I was working for Miss Nanny Leach, diagonally across from First Baptist Church there on Academy Street, right across from Dr. Yarba's house. I worked for her. She was a retired school teacher. And, I went to work for her. Excuse me. I went to work for her. It'd be a hot summertime, and we would build the chicken floors. She had maybe a dozen chicken houses, and she would have dirt and sand hauled in, and then take them and put them in layers to create. That's the way you used to build roads too, and you'd make a layer of concrete. A layer of the clay. And a layer of the sand, and you pack it, make it hard. And that was the kind of chicken house floors we had. I started working for her for 10 cents an hour, and she would try to get me to put down that shovel and rest. I thought when you hire out to somebody, you work every moment. I didn't know you had breaks. I thought you're supposed to work. And she tried to get me to put it down and rest, and I'd be perspiring and maybe about to fall out, but I kept working. And so the first payday, she paid me 12 and a half cents an hour instead of 10. I got a 2.5 cent raise.
Wow.
And I've learned, you know, if you apply yourself, people will hire you. I've been in over 60 different businesses. One of them was a car business. I went to a car dealer downtown and applied for a job. He told me he didn't need anybody, but I could fill out an application, and he called me if I had an opening. So I went in that little booth, and I filled out the application. I went out, handed it to him. He looked at it for 30 seconds and looked up and hired me on the spot. And I tell you what he saw he liked. He says, what salary do you expect on the line? I put none. Printed real large, none. And in parentheses, I prefer a commission. That way I write my own paycheck. And he hired me on the spot. The first month, I became their top salesman. And I know one man been 8 years. Had a lot of repeat business. I didn't know as much as he did. I didn't know the product like he did. I didn't know how to sell like he did. But if I heard somebody say, I got to work tonight, and they didn't want to work, I'd say, I work in your place. In other words, I just work. Longer, harder hours. And if you work and apply yourself in America, you can get ahead. So I've been blessed with a good work ethic.
Yes, you sure have.
Yes, sir.
That's a great story. Tell me about your chicken business. You mentioned it a few minutes ago.
Oh.
When you were still a boy, you had a chicken business?
Yeah, I want to tell you about that. I had a Raleigh Times newspaper out, and I was delivering some papers to an Esso station, now they call them Exxon. Is at the corner of Rita Creek and Chatham Street, right on the corner there. There's a car lot there now. And they had a lot next to them that was grown over with weeds and briars, and they were cleaning it up. And there's a True Age sign out there. On a 4x4, it had a 4-foot square sign on each side. And they were seamed on the edge, you know, for windage. And when they tore that sign down, the man there gave me those two True Age signs. And I carried them home from back then. You didn't waste anything. And I figured I could make something out of those signs. And then there was another man there named Garland Jones. And he was the superintendent of a construction crew when they were building the stadium behind the high school. And they had a raceway around it that they had forms and put concrete in it to outline the raceway. And he gave me the forms. And I pulled the nails out, straightened the nails, I scraped the wood off, and I built me a house out of used wood, used nails, and trade signs. And back then, people would build I'd see farmers, they'd have a big barn, 8-10 foot high, and they'd put the chickens down on the ground, and they put a pan of feed in there, and they get in there and scratch it like crazy. And I thought that was rather wasteful. But what I did, I figured if I made a double decker out of it, with the drop board under it so I could rake it out and keep them clean, I made a double decker out of it, and it was just 4 foot square. And then each one was less than 2 foot high, but I would sell them for fried chickens, you know, before they got big enough to bump the head. But I built that house, and I put the feed on the outside, and I got me some orange crates. Orange crates are thick in the yard today, and I split them up into little slats. And they'd stick the head through there to eat, and they didn't waste a bit of that food. And then when I got it built, I didn't have a nickel in that chicken house. But what I did, I went down to the Carey Hatchery, and it's at the corner of Harrison and Chatham Street, where the drive-in windows are for the Fidelity Bank down there. Mm-hmm. And I went down to the hatchery, and I picked out 50 of the best sick chickens I could find. If they're crippled or weak, they'd throw them away. They'd cull them and throw those that couldn't possibly live, throw them away. I picked out 50 of the best sick chickens I could find, and I'd feed them with a medicine dropper. I'd even put sulfur in there, because Mother used to give us sulfur for a lot of different ailments.
Sulfur?
Sulfur, dry
oh,
sulfur.
Oh, sulfur, so, yeah,
they'd
yeah.
take it for medication.
Yeah.
And I probably gave them enough sulfur to kill them. And I think just the Lord honored my efforts. And I raised 48 of the 50 sick chickens, which is a decent mortality rate back then.
For healthy chickens.
Healthy chickens. And I made enough off of those to buy an old construction building when they tore down that house where I was telling you about I have the cornerstone for it. They took some of the old timbers, old heart pine, and they built a construction building. And they had sold it to Bill Smith that had a Texaco station down there where the cricket station is now, the intersection of the Durham Highway and Chatham. And it was on the right side where this, they have car lot, I mean sell it, I mean rent trailers or something like that now. But it's on the hill there. I made enough money on those chickens to buy that house. It cost $8. And then I jacked it up Bard, Mr. Dan Craddock. By the way, he used to live on this property that you where the elementary school is now. He used to live right there. He was a railroad man. I borrowed a railroad jack from him, carried it over there on my bicycle. And I mean, it's amazing. You think of a kid my size being able to carry a railroad jack, but I worked all my life and I was a young man. And I carried it on my bicycle over there and jacked it up. Truck backed under it, let it down. Mr. Holloman, you remember that house in Cary? Doug Holloman lives on the corner of Urban and Chatham. His house was pretty lone, always pretty there on the right. That's Doug Holloman. His daddy had two trucks. One, he delivered ice, had his men deliver ice all over Cary for the ice boxes. And not many people had refrigerators. Mm-hmm. And then he had another truck, much nicer. He'd deliver feed to people. The hatchery also had feed, you know, they sell feed to people that had chickens. About everybody raised chickens. I mean, a lot of them did. Anyway, in fact, the daddy had that nice truck, and he charged $1.50 an hour to use that truck. And I jacked that house up, the big house.
And how big was this house?
It was about 8 by 8 foot square, 16 foot long probably.
Okay.
And then I jacked it up, he backed under there, and we carried it down there and put it out from the house in Mr. Joe Smith's pasture. And I was in the chicken business, sure enough, then. And it cost me $1.50 to move it. It took 1 hour. I threw those blocks, concrete blocks that I used to hold it up while I was jacking. I threw them in on the inside after I got through jacking it. He drove it over there. We unloaded it, jacked it up, and drove out. It took 1 hour.
Wow.
And that was a miracle. A kid can't do that.
No. So it cost you $8 for the house and $1.50 to move it. So for less than $10.
And then what I did, I went to the Durham Farmers Exchange and got all the chickens. I made a battery, you know, had decks of them. And I got the chickens on consignment from a place in Durham. And at the end, when I got through raising, they'd pick them up and give me a profit on them. And so I got
So they'd give them to you for free.
Yeah, and I got in business.
And you fed them and raised them, and then you gave them back, and they shared the profit with you.
Yeah.
That's great.
I mean, you know, it's just great to be able to use your mind and think, and then use your muscle and work. And I've seen a lot of people that always pray and never working. I believe in putting feet to your prayers. Mm-hmm. And then the Lord will honor and bless you. But if you don't, you're in trouble. Yeah.
Now, did you have any brothers that were helping you with any of this?
Or? I had one brother and two sisters of the Martin clan. The older ones, the O'Briens, had moved out during the Depression
and
married. And so it was mother and four children. And,
okay.
My brother's a little older, but he didn't take an interest in the things I did.
Wow. That's quite a story.
He was much smarter than I was, but I worked harder.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. So you had mentioned to me on the phone that probably somewhere in your youth, you also worked on Kildare Farm, the actual farm?
Yeah.
Okay, now what did you do there?
Just anything that needed be done, you know, cleaning the barn or whatever. I remember when I was 12 years old, I had a mule that I had to carry to the blacksmith shop, which was next to that hatchery down there. And I carried him down there to get Mr. Hunstrup to put horseshoes on it. And you know where the McDonald's is down there? Well, just below McDonald's, you probably have never noticed it, but there
on Kildare Farm.
On Kildare.
Yeah.
Right below there, there's another restaurant there. Anyway, there is a roadway underneath Kildare that you've never noticed it. Well, see, it used to be that deep, and then it's been filled in, and as you drive a tractor underneath it, but it was a dirt road, and the old mule, I was trying to get him to move out, and he put on brakes and threw me over his head, and he backed up. If he'd come forward, he'd trample me to death, and the Lord looking after me. And he got down to hunt shrews for that mule, because you don't have to give up. I mean, you know, have to get up and start over. I don't go back to the boss and say, I can't do this, he let me go. Anyway, I got down there and I was holding the mule by his hind foot so he got one nail in the shoe and the mule got to wiggling, and that's sharp. Have you ever seen a nail for a horseshoe? They're very sharp. They're much sharper than that right there.
Oh my.
And it's kind of a square shape.
Okay.
And he got to moving, and a 12-year-old boy just couldn't hold that mule. And when I had to turn him loose, that thing ripped my ripped me open right there on my hand. You know, even that is a good experience. You never give up because you have adversity. And I don't ever give up.
Mm-hmm. Obviously. Mm-hmm. So now, how did you get the cows and the mules? Did you earn the money to buy them as a kid?
I don't remember how we did it. Of course, you know, all my life, I didn't spend every cent I made. I learned to save. In fact, let me tell you this. I'm 82 years old. I have never owned, for my personal use, a new car or a new truck. I buy an old one because it came up the hard way. I have never been in debt for anything that depreciates in value. If I can't pay for it, I leave it there.
Wow.
And that'll make you be more conservative in your approach. You know what our state motto is? Es quam vider, which translated says to be rather than to seem. People that are buying a new vehicle every year seem to be prospering, but they're staying on the bottom.
And burying themselves deeper.
Yeah, I mean, that's the American way.
And, unfortunately.
And they advertise nothing down or zero interest for the first year or two, and they're just hooking people up to something that will keep them on the bottom. And I don't think we ought to do that. So I've been blessed not to go in debt.
So you learned that lesson early on too, didn't you?
Now, I bought a car for my wife. You know, I have to get her something. She thinks she ought to have a new one. And I buy one occasionally, I'll take the old one. But I don't need it because I'm not trying to impress anybody. And I don't want to impress anybody.
Yeah. That's great. So now you just missed World War II, but you went into the military right out of high school.
No, I was considered a World War II veteran, but the war was winding down.
Okay.
I was in the U.S. Coast Guard.
Oh, okay. So Japan was still going on when you graduated from high school. Pacific was still...
It was declared over, see, I was in the Coast Guard, and I didn't go overseas. The furthest I ever got was northern banks of Cuba. Oh. You know, just up and down the coast.
Oh, okay.
But I learned some great things in the Coast Guard. And in fact, I'll give you a news article in 1961. It shows me and my wife and our three children at that time, later we had six. But we were in that, they took our picture of a, I designed and built the first swimming pool in Raleigh for an apartment complex. And it was, I mean, that's another story, except that's not like here.
But still, yeah. So you built the first apartment complex, or the first pool for the apartment complex. And
but
you owned the complex.
That in the Coast Guard, you see.
Huh?
In the Coast Guard, one man has to cover more trades because you have fewer men on a small ship than a big ship.
Ah.
For instance, in the Navy, you'd have one man that does diesel engines, another gasoline, another machine shop, another welding, another fluid flow, a lot of different topics that designated in one field. But I had no more. And that was a blessing.
Yeah.
And
so they trained you many, many different aspects of a ship.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, the swimming pool is like 1 year, I think, being 50 years old, 49 this June. And the man in inspection has been doing that for 30 years. He's retiring this year, I believe. But he said he has never inspected a pool that was had clear water than ours. And you see, I knew something about fluid flow. I bought me three old tanks from the junkyard. I had to cut them down so they go in the space I had for them. And I put a lid on them like a port ship. I mean, port on a ship, you know, where you close it. But I'd put stone and sand and create a filter system like that. And it's what we called an open head pump. The average person that does swimming pools, he don't know the difference in a closed head and they use a closed head. I use open head, and you can pump three times as much water. And so I use a one-horse pump, and they use a three-horse. But it works, and it's still working.
Wow. That's great.
The man says it's the clearest water he's ever seen.
So you still own that apartment complex
and
the pool? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All these years, and it's still fine.
Yeah.
It's still working fine.
By doing that, you see, I had people waiting in line to get in. I did not have one vacancy when I had just 65 apartments. We got several hundred now, but I had 65 apartments. And in 5 years, I did not have the equivalent of 1 month's vacancy out of all of them. People were waiting to get in there because I had a swimming pool. And I wasn't greedy either. I had a spring that I used. It was spring water.
Uh-huh.
And that spring water tastes better than anything you'll get out of a city spigot. And I put the well system in, I mean the pipes. I used a tractor and dug a trench, put it in there, covered it up. I mean, and that's a whole lot more efficient than going out there digging your head.
Yes, indeed.
But, I mean, you know, you learn to do those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's fantastic. So you've developed housing developments.
Mm-hmm.
You have apartment buildings and complexes. You have at least one mall, if not more. So you've developed a lot of different things in your long career.
Do you own
any other malls or shopping centers? More than South Hills.
Mm-hmm.
You do. Okay. More in Cary or?
Well, Raleigh, and I got places that I will develop, and those are not through.
You're not through yet. Now you're looking at a 62 story building or something.
Who told you about that?
You did.
I did.
You did. So what is that about? Is it a for sure thing, or are you just still in the talking stages? Or
yes, I need to show you. Are you still on? You don't want this stuff, do you? I mean, about other things.
You could show me later, I guess, after we turn the tape off. But it's exciting that something like that might be coming to Cary.
I'm a dreamer.
Yes, you sure are.
You know, the Bible says over in Proverbs, where there's no vision, the people perish. And so you have to have a vision.
Yeah.
Had to have a vision for this place, knowing I couldn't have built it.
Well, and it keeps evolving.
You see these brick here?
Yes, the brick inside the
mall. They're handmade by prisoners.
Really?
Maybe 140, 50 years ago.
Really?
They tore down Central Prison and built a new one. And they were built out of handmade brick. I mean, they threw these away. And they were dumping over that next hill on the hillside close to Western Boulevard. I went over there, took a couple of men with me, and I was picking out brick and throwing them up there. They were putting them on my truck, and you see them?
And they're beautiful. They're absolutely
very
beautiful.
Colorful.
Yes, indeed.
Cost you a nickel, but a little time.
Just haul them away.
And you know, see this curve? Glass
yes, the curve glass for your office.
I designed and built it.
Wow, that is great.
And I seen a house with something like this, and it's going to cost me $10,000 for not even about a third of this much, you know. And I did all these for probably, I doubt if I had $1,000.
Wow. The curved glass and everything, and the supports and the whole thing. Yeah, they're beautiful. And you can see the whole mall from up here.
That's right.
And keep an eye on things.
Improvise.
Yeah. Well, you're a designer on top of everything else. So, wow.
Well, we've it was a mall and then a demall. Now they got roses back. I'm trying to remall. They were waiting on Burlington to put that checkout back there and generate a little more synergy, you know.
So is Burlington Co. Factory going to be moving out, or
no, they got
they're expanding?
About 5 more years on the lease.
Oh, okay.
So they can stay if they want to.
Yeah.
And if they will leave, they do me a favor because I rent somewhere else for more money.
So now how long has Roses been back and been here?
About a month. About 6 weeks, I don't know.
I was just walking around down there. It's a beautiful, big store. Very big. Yeah.
It's
so you enclosed part of what had been the open kind of central aisle to create that space, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just using it all. It's great. Yeah. So you probably don't have much concern about the growth of Cary. You're actually making it work to your advantage, it sounds like, even now. Because some folks who've lived here a long time aren't real comfortable with all this growth. But how do you feel about it?
I've heard some of the old Southern boys get somebody from around New York City. Some of those are a little bit harsher than people. Where did you come from?
I was born in Pennsylvania, but I spent most of my life before I got here in California.
Pennsylvania and upstate New York, they're pretty much like we are, but around the Bronx and in the big city, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and they look at things a little different from the way we do. And some of my friends, you know, some of them come across the Southern boys as they have know-it-alls. Running the mouth, and some of my friends say, Yankee, why don't you go home? You know what I tell them? I tell them, I want to thank you for coming down here and helping me out. And then maybe I'll tell them a little story about when I was building my wife a house, and the little Mexican fellow says, how much you pay for this land? And that's $100. and why did it go up? Because my friend from up north came down here and built the values up. And I love them for coming and helping me. You don't bite the hand that feeds you. This land that we're sitting on. I don't have an acre out here that I paid over $1,200 an acre for.
Wow.
And I've been offered $1 million. and they'd take it all and do what they did in North Hills and tear it down. Start over.
Yeah.
$1 million an acre. I've been blessed.
Yeah.
I've got a farm over at Apex, and I paid $1,300 an acre. And you know what went right next to me? A Walmart.
Walmart.
They paid $280,000 an acre. And I was offered $200,000 before they started building, but I knew they'd already bought it. I said, I think I'll wait on Walmart, because whenever they go somewhere, the land around them goes up. And if they pay $280,000, I don't worry.
But you have the foresight to realize that. Yeah.
Well, I guess you might say I might be a visionary.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to plan ahead. Let me just tell you how I got in the apartment business. I had bought a house. It was a duplex. It was on the corner of Gorman. No, excuse me, on the corner of Dan Allen Drive. That's the entrance into state, you know, in Western Boulevard. And back then, there was just two lanes for Western Boulevard. And Dan Allen was just a double street, you know, and no lights on either one of them. And I bought a house over there from state. And they had to put them up for sale. I bid on it, I got it. And I cut one half in two and moved it into Cary. In fact, I still own it. And I'm still getting rent from it. But I moved it into Cary. And the other half didn't have, the two bedrooms were wide open because I carried the petition with me to Cary. And so that was before I got married. I got married June 26, 54. But anyway, I was living in one end. The end that the living room kitchen was on, I lived there and just camping out. Didn't have water, sewer, anything, lights, and I worked night and day. So I built me, took scrap, built me a fire, and I was jacking it up, because I had to jack it up so you could have a truck back on it to move it. And I got it jacked up, I was jacking it up, and all of a sudden it looked like it was moving, and you know, the high flames were flicker. I had to stand still. Is it moving, or is it just flames flickering there? And I stood real still, and it was moving. I had to get out of the way, let it fall. And one end was down on one corner, it all twisted up, and two bedrooms wide open. It was a mess. And you know, there's an old saying, when you get a lemon, start a lemonade stand. Or when you have a problem, look for the opportunity. I knew they were going to sell the other buildings. They were running an ad in the paper, and you bid on them, seal bids. People come over there to see those houses, to bid on them. They walk around that mess I had, and they walk off shaking their head. Not one soul bid on those other houses. And I got those houses for $300 for the whole house. That's two apartments. Two apartments. Moved them down to Avent Ferry Road, and that's how I got started, University Apartments.
Oh, that's great.
And it was just, it was an opportunity.
Yeah.
And too many people, when they have something bad to happen, oh, that's the end of the line. I look for the opportunity.
That's a great story.
And I still have them. I brick veneered them. And in fact, I got some of these old brick over there.
Did you?
anyway, when I built that those apartments, one day, up towards Western Boulevard, and going down Avent Ferry, and there was a fellow I'd seen him walking up and down the road. You know, he didn't have a car. Mm-hmm. And I stopped to give him a ride, just stopped to give him a hand. But he told me he used to live on that property I just bought. He said, you've got the best spring of water I've ever seen on your place. I didn't know it.
Oh.
say, I just stopped to give him a hand. And I was blessed. He told me where it was. It's at the base of the biggest tree out there. He said he used to live in that house up above that tree. And in the hot summertime, if I couldn't sleep, I'd go down and get me a cool drink of that water. I'd sleep like a baby. And it was privet bushes all over the place, little prickly bushes. But I could see the stream that runs through our property, and I could see a little tributary from that spring water running out. And so I had to climb up through there and knock the bushes down so I could get to it. But it was a spring and solid rock. I just hewed it out a little so I'd have more reservoir. And another man lived right down here on Avent Ferry Road, had a pump to go bad. And he sold me his old pump for $5. I went to Burke's Hardware and I got me 2 5-cent washers to put on it. And I had me a good pump for $5.10. And so I put that in. And then I dug a trench and put this old cheap black pipe in, you know, to serve those houses. And later, as I grew and added on, I needed more water. And so I got, I went to the town of Zebulon. They had a big old tank car that the whole, you know, tank cars work crew on the railroad. They would have a great big old tank car, hold about 6,000 gallons of water.
Wow.
And that was the water supply or storage for Zebulon. But they had gotten prosperous enough to build a tank overhead. And so they sold me that for a little bit of nothing. And I brought it down there. And I drilled a well. Mm-hmm. And after drilling the well, the spring went dry because I got the spring water. And so that's... I think that has something to do with the health man, plus the good filter system. It says it's the clearest pool he's ever examined.
And it's coming from that spring.
Yeah.
And
it's 49 years old.
Wow.
And it's still got the tank supplying that water.
That's great.
And you know, and I didn't have... Hey, Lydia, could you give me... Give me that swim pool thing.
Okay, sure. I'll get it right now.
And I had the water. Didn't cost me anything. I mean, I had to have it for the pool.
Yeah.
But as I added on more apartments, I just kept tapping into it. Now, I didn't have one well. Now, municipalities require 2 wells, so if one goes bad, you got another. How did I get by with not having one? People never gave out of water. I put a big air pump, like you have at a service station, great big old tank. And during the peak periods at night and the morning, getting ready to go to work, the pump just 12 gallons a minute, it wouldn't keep up.
Yeah.
So when it started dropping, I had it regulated so that would come on and pump air in it until the pump could catch up. And I did that over 5. See, it didn't have city sewer or water out there then.
Yeah.
And so I was able to keep it going, never gave out of water. But it just had a backup plan, and it worked.
It's great.
So, I mean, you know, it's just... And here's the...
So this is an article about the first swimming pool in Raleigh, Ideas for Apartment Owners. And there's a picture of you and your wife and 3 children in the pool or at the pool. It's beautiful. Big, square pool. It's got brick around the edge. Mm-hmm. So it's beautiful. How deep is it at the deepest end?
I reckon it's about 10 foot.
Wow.
But I got a ledge around the deep end so that you can be swimming at the deep end and you can stand up on the ledge.
Oh, very smart.
And
oh,
I've never seen one like that.
No.
It just made sense to do it.
Yeah.
I never designed a pool before. But you just used the range the Lord gave you.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Oh, this is great. And it's still there. Well, many people have copied your idea, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
But see right there, it says, read that, yeah. I'll type that in.
$5 water pump, free spring water, no vacancies in 5 years.
I mean, not even one total vacancy.
Vacancy.
In other words, if I was getting, back then, maybe I was getting $200 a month. I don't know what I was getting, don't remember now. I know now it's over $500 a month. But maybe it's $200 a month. But they did not have to buy water from the city. It wasn't in the city.
So it was free water.
And it's free. Yeah. I didn't charge them.
Yeah.
It didn't cost me.
Right.
And it worked. And let me tell you something else. About the time that happened, I was at, where do you go to church?
Oh, up in Wake Forest.
What church is it?
Yeah, it's a church called Journeys.
Journey, okay.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good one. We all go on a journey. But I was at church about this time, just before I opened that pool. And see, we had 3 children that time. Now we got 6. Now we got 21 grandchildren.
Wow.
We've been blessed. But anyway, I was at church at Athens Drive, across from Athens Drive High School. It was called Boulevard Baptist back then. And I was in that little building up there on the side. There's 2 buildings. There's one nearest Cary was the first building. And one morning I counted in one little section 35 women and 7 men. And thought came to me, where are the men? And I thought, if it weren't for our women keeping us together spiritually, we'd go to hell in a handbasket and work. But I tell you what, I promised the Lord that morning, as long as I had good health, I'd be in his house every Sunday morning. And used to, she'd have those 3 kids dressed, ready to go. Somebody called me, heat was out, and this, that, and the other. I'd be crawling around the house, let her go to church with the kids. You know, when I made a commitment to be at God's house every Sunday morning, I quit getting calls on Sunday morning. That's the way the Lord works.
Wow, that's wild.
I mean, he's just been so good to us.
Yeah.
And so, during that time, during that 5-year span from that day forward, and first I give a man a ride, and I discover a supply of water. And then I wasn't greedy. I didn't charge him for the use of that water. It saved them money, you know.
Right. Well, and the article says that you also didn't raise the rents when you opened the pool in mm-hmm. the apartment either. Mm-hmm. So they got free use of the pool.
Sure.
Which mm-hmm. was a big blessing for them.
Yeah. So we anyway, during that during the time, that the 5-year period, I acquired this land out here and started the first shopping center here, the first mall. And here was a little later. We didn't open that until 71 or 72, I think. But during this time, the Lord blessed us. And you can't outgive God. He's been good to us.
Oh, that's great. Well, this has just been a wonderful, wonderful interview. I want to thank you for taking the time and telling me all of your stories. So you've had quite a life, but you've contributed a huge amount to Cary. And so we thank you. And you just did again by giving us your stories.
It's been my pleasure and my blessing.
Well, good.
For what little I've done. I mean, yeah, I'm just a little cog in a big wheel.
Well, you're a mighty strong cog, that's for sure. So thank you so much for sharing all of your stories and memories with us today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, my pleasure.